Hello and welcome. I'm Gary Scheib. Thanks for listening in as we continue to talk with leaders in our community. Today we are joined by the Mockingbird Society, Annie Blackledge, the executive director, and Orion Olson, a network representative, are here. Welcome, Annie and Orion. Thanks for coming today.
Thanks so much for having us.
It's a pleasure to be here.
I'm glad to have you here. I'll bet there aren't a lot of folks listening that know that name, Mockingbird Society. So we're here to fix that. Mockingbird Society, if I may, I'll give you a little bit. It's an advocacy agency, right? Organization dedicated to building more awareness and better a system of foster care here in the state, right?
Correct. Lots of people mistake us for an Audubon agency. Okay. We have nothing to do with birds, but everything to do with working with young people with lived experience in foster care and or homelessness to advocate for change in the system. And we also have some practice advocacy that we do as well with the Mockingbird family.
And a nonprofit, right?
We are a nonprofit, correct.
And how long, I'll keep going with some basics. How long have you been around, and is it a statewide? Is that what, was
it
that
is
right?
Statewide. We want to talk about how many chapters we have, Orion?
We have 7 chapters in the state of Washington.
And we're in Olympia, Tacoma, Seattle. We are also in the Everett area, Spokane, and Yakima. And our Youth Advocates Ending Homelessness has another chapter in Seattle, so there are 2 chapters.
Yeah, you got a couple of key parts, too, that you do, right? There's advocacy is a big part of this to sort of just change this system, right? I mean, I don't know if we want a little background on foster care in the state a little bit to help people, you know, why are we at a place where there need to be changes, I guess, you know? What are the problems and how did we get there? And what is the Mockingbird Society hoping to change? Is it slowly, a little bit at a time, or maybe just wholesale changes? Things got to change, you know, completely.
Okay, well, I'm going to go ahead and I'll start with this, Orion, and then please add some things in. So I actually grew up in foster care. I was adopted out of foster care here in the state in Tacoma, and that adoption did not work out so well. When my adopted father died at the age of 12, I went back into foster care on the East Coast. I think it's safe to say that most folks are used to the idea of, you know, orphanages, that was something we used to do, and that's how we handled children without parents and without support. And around 60 years ago, we really revamped that idea and moved into family-based foster care, which is the foster care system that we have right now. I will say, unfortunately, we've gotten away from really that family community-based foster care, and states across the nation are really struggling with a crisis right now of not having enough foster parents. Our state is not excluded. And unfortunately, our traditional system of foster care doesn't work for everyone. Orion, I'm wondering if you could talk a little bit about the conversation we had the other day about the current foster care system.
Yeah, so traditionally, there is one man, one woman, basically, a straight couple being foster care parents or adoptive parents versus allowing room for there to be LGBTQ foster care and adoptive parents, in addition to being more culturally diverse. So typically there's like a Caucasian couple at the head.
Why do you think that's important, Orion?
It's important because one size doesn't fit all.
Yeah, and it sounds logical. There's got to be more ways to take care of such a variety of people than one cookie-cutter system. Is that part of what Mockingbird does, to advocate for change, that kind of change? I mean, you said actually the foster care system hasn't been around that long, relatively speaking, so they must have tried one way and said, this is how it works.
And really, the truth is that we made foster care up with the best of intentions. But as Orion and I have talked, intention doesn't always equal impact. And we have a lot of young people in our foster care system who identify as LGBTQ, who don't have the proper supports and people engaged in the system to help them make their transitions to adulthood. And we also have high numbers of young people of color who are overrepresented in our foster care system as well. And it's important for them to have people who look like them and who come from their culture to help them and help their families.
Boy, that makes perfect sense that the diversity of the adoptive families ought to look like the diversity of the foster care kids. What you said, we kind of made it up. That just struck me as, that sounds so ludicrous, but that is what we've done, isn't it? Do counties run these, or is it state organizes
it? It's different from state to state. In our state, we run it on a regional basis. So there are six regions across the state, which can be fairly large. And one of the other things that has transpired over the years is young people and children get placed wherever there's an open bed. So you could come into foster care in Yakima and end up being placed in Bellingham. And really removed from your community and everything that you know, because that's where the open bed is. But perversely, the next day, a young person could come into care in Bellingham and end up being placed in Yakima, because that's where the open bed is. And I know you and I have talked a bit, Orion, about mobility and that its impact on us. I was wondering if you would say just a little bit about why that's so challenging for young people experiencing foster care.
So it's really hard to be moving from place to place, because you're trying to decide basically if you can trust somebody or a place, if you're going to just be there for a night or if you're going to be there for longer. You're going to be looking for places that are potentially safe or unsafe, like constantly analyzing and trying to, like, just constant change is really hard to roll with all the time.
And why? School's hard too, right?
New teachers, new students, new school atmosphere. One might be more accepting of people of color and LGBTQ versus another school district, which might be completely the opposite, oppressive and like not welcoming of either of those at all.
I think it's hard to.
Go ahead. That just sounds so impressive that you realize that those are potential hurdles in the development of a kid.
Well, I think it's fair to say, and Orion, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but it's really hard to make relationship when you're constantly moving, and that's such an important thing for us to have. And schools have different requirements, right? Can you talk a little bit about your school experience?
Yeah, so I actually went to seven different schools throughout my high school career. I dropped out of my first senior year of high school, and most recently there, I found out that I would have been stuck in high school for at least another 2 to 3 years. However, there was a previous bill that the Mockingbird Society had advocated for, which would allow for
partial credit
for all previous coursework, and I was able to graduate with this past year, 2018.
Yay!
You know, I've heard from educators too that a kid who, you know, and they see them. I mean, the elementary school teachers, doesn't matter, well, any age, but the stability of every day coming to the same school needs to help that kid just to get the academics and the education. But you're talking about the roundedness of a whole, family type of thing, right? Can we go there about the stability, what that's needed, and how the Mockingbird Society can change that kind of little part of this?
Oh, I'm so excited to talk to you about the Mockingbird family.
Good. So you call it a family. It sounds like there needs to be family here, right?
Yeah. We have something called the Mockingbird family. Orion, do you want to describe sort of how it's set up?
So it's set to model after extended family. And so we call them constellations. And at the center of this constellation is a hub home, which is an experienced foster care parent or household that has experience and is the home that everybody else, satellite homes, that the satellite homes will reach out to the hub home if they need support with a kid, say someone needs respite care, and there's always open beds available at the hub home. And there's also opportunity for these families to get together, and so the kids can get together and like play and just get familiar with each other, and as well as the other adults, and grow comfortable in a pretty relaxed setting.
Well, that sounds interesting. So that, but that sounds geographic then. Is that right? That to be, what do you call them, hubs and satellite homes, they have to be somewhat close by to be, to lend support. That's, it's a real support network, but so give me, how does that work then?
Well, it depends on where you live. So
to get going, I'm going to guess, to get this put down, a footprint of this put down in the first place.
Yes, but not for the reasons you might think.
Oh,
so
okay.
We talk to folks, like we have a constellation in Smoky Point, and some of these families can be 20 miles apart, but they say, you know, hey, for us, driving to get a quart of milk takes us, you know, 15 miles down the road. So they're able to use technology and things in more rural communities. And then, you know, we've got more geographic proximity, obviously, in more urban areas. And I'm wondering, do you want to talk a little bit about respite is, what respite is? You had brought that up in your comments, and folks might not know that term.
No, respite. What's that? What are we talking about?
Respite is when a youth is experiencing a crisis, and they need a place that's like safe for them to like calm, not necessarily to like have a break, and from what the environment that they are in, that they might have been triggered in. So.
Yeah, I think that's one reason. It might also be that a foster parent needs a break. They've got a vacation planned with, you know, just the parents, and
anniversary.
They need somewhere for their young people to be. It could also be, you know, if things maybe aren't working out in one of the satellite homes, that they can go and take a break at the foster parents, the hub home parents, their house.
So a place to fall back on, a built-in safety net.
Yes.
So having respite places that I can spend time here, or I can give up some of my responsibilities for a while to someone else.
Yes.
Oh, awesome.
And we hear from foster parents in the traditional system that that is one of the things that is really lacking for them. I'll tell you just a quick little story of a family that we are working with down in Tacoma, who had six adolescent boys in their home. They had not been on vacation in almost 10 years.
Oh.
But they felt so comfortable with this community within a community that had been built. What the mom had told me is in the past, the department was willing to get them respite, but that would have meant their kids being split up and being sent to people that they didn't know, maybe even sometimes on the other side of the mountains.
Yeah, again, that stability thing is needed.
Correct. And the amazing thing is that the hub home providers did not have six bedrooms for these young men. So the foster dad took it upon himself to go and stay in the foster home with the boys, so that they could be in their own beds. And, you know, he just took over the foster family's routine for them. And they got to go on vacation for the first time in a very long time.
Wow, that's really cool. We are talking this morning with Annie Blackledge, the executive director of the Mockingbird Society, and Orion Olson, a network representative. The Mockingbird Society, let's tell folks now, online, they can find out more about them, right?
They can. The mockingbirdsociety.org.
Yeah, mockingbirdsociety.org, just all spelled out.
Yep.
.org means it's a nonprofit, right?
Correct.
Yeah, must have a Facebook and Twitter presence, right?
Facebook can be found at MB Society, and Twitter is at MB underscore Society.
Great. As you were talking about the families and the hubs, and that some of them, foster parents, like they need this break and the support. So as using this family model and the hub and the satellites, do those parents last longer as foster parents? I mean, some foster parents, they do it for a while, and they say, I can't do it anymore.
Yeah, it's a hard vocation.
Well, it's a real deep calling for a human being to muster that up and be dedicated for so long. Can they do it for so long?
Well, do you want to talk about our evaluation?
Well, in the Mockenberg family model, we have a retention rate of 94% versus Washington State's 63% of foster parents.
Yeah, so yeah. We've been proven to retain foster parents.
Well, that's awesome. You keep data like that.
We had a evaluation done by the Washington State Institute for Public Policy. And they discovered that we had a very high retention rate, which is almost unheard of in this field.
Well, so this model you've got, is it elsewhere? Is it unique? Are you kind of built on somebody else's? Or?
Yeah, well, really, it is based, like Orion had said, on that extended family concept. So when a young person goes to the hub for their respite, that's like going to grandma and grandpa's house.
Nice.
They know where the Cheerios are. They know where the PlayStation is. You know, it's a comfortable
feeling to this. Yeah.
Yeah, and we have 22 constellations across the state. We're mainly on the west side of the state
18.
Right now.
Yeah.
18.
18, but then Catholic Community Services has a couple as well.
Oh, you're still growing. So
yeah. We are.
So to encourage this and the growth, do you need to change the, like you said, it's in regions the way foster care is done. You're an advocacy group, so do you, how do you do that? How do you get those changes through bureaucracies? I mean, sometimes that must seem like pushing a boulder up a hill.
Oh, my goodness. Well, let me start by saying that, you know, somebody once told me it's always better to be the guy from out of town. You're never a prophet in your own land.
Right.
This model has actually been undertaken by the United Kingdom. In the 4 years that they've been in operation, they have almost 50 constellations up and running. We've been doing this work in Washington State since 2004, and as I said, we only have 22 up and running. It does cost money. We value those hub homes as providers, and we do pay them a stipend every month to provide that support to that constellation of families. We believe at the back end there is a return on investment. When you don't have to keep recruiting new foster parents, when, you know, you have folks who are familiar with working with young people and, you know, they can get the respite. Those foster hubs help with transportation and all kinds of good stuff. But I will say we're not done developing our model. As we were talking about mobility earlier, one of the most important things to me, because I know it impacted me in foster care as well, was all the moving. And we believe that children and young people should be kept in their home communities. 60% of us go back home. And when we go back home, most of the time we go back at a deficit.
Oh.
They say that, you know, young people lose 3 to 6 months of academic achievement every time they move.
Yeah, so that I don't know, goal to try and keep a kid in the same school is counterproductive when his foster home might be 45 miles away and they bus a kid back and forth or so, hoping that we're doing the right thing. But, man, that's tough. So is something? Tell me about Kent. Is Kent doing something a little better than that? Or you've got something going on there, right?
We do. We have an incredible community group that's come together. We have business leaders. We have Representative Tina Orwell. We have the school district. We have other service provider partners who have made a commitment to keeping their kids in Kent. 80% of young people in the last 15 years and children who've come into care in Kent have been placed outside of Kent.
That shakes your head.
It really does. And seeing as most of us go home, the main goal of foster care is really to reunify families. And that's really hard to do when maybe mom or dad are in, you know, one area and the child's been placed 70 miles away.
Yeah.
How do you do visitation? How do we do siblings visitation? It's just very difficult. And Ryan, you can tell me if I'm wrong or not here, but at least in my experience, even when we have a tough home life, most kids figure out like sort of protective factors in their community. There's a teacher or a guidance counselor or a church, things that we're connected to.
Oh, definitely, yeah.
And we lose all that, right, mm-hmm. when we go into care most of the time. So this is about this community making a commitment to keeping their children in their home communities.
Did the Mockingbird Society, like, say, here's, we're going to try this with all of these different agencies in one city, and Kent said, yeah, we'll try that here, or did,
yes.
Or were they already doing that?
Oh, no, so no, they came to us.
This is the work you guys are doing, really saying, feet on the ground, look, here, this will help, and you go from door to door and knock from office to office, is that?
Correct.
Oh, wow.
Correct. And we'll be doing something a little revolutionary. I really do believe this, I have to tell you, that this is the future of foster care everywhere. You know, the UK is having the same problems we're having. Every state is having the same problems. And if we want better outcomes for children and young people, we have to keep them in their home communities.
And again, we are talking this morning with the Mockingbird Society, online, mockingbirdsociety.org. All spelled out. And another big aspect of what you guys do, and we're talking about making changes and talking people into doing things differently, is you actually go down to Olympia, right? And you take youths. I mean, this is, their voice has to be heard. People from with a foster background have to be heard. And how does Olympia, I mean, you guys do this once a year at least, right?
Well, this is Orion's area of expertise.
Orion, you go down there and knock on some legislator's door and say, hey, I got something to tell you?
Not quite like that.
Okay. well, I'd like to hear about it.
What we do is we have a yearly advocacy cycle starting in March and May. So that's our identifying challenges. So we ask our youth to come up with reform ideas that they want to see happen.
Mm-hmm.
And we then move into, through June and August, defining solutions. And we also brainstorm with them with what they come up with as possible solutions to those challenges that have come up. And in we have a big annual event called Youth Leadership Summit.
Yes, and that's coming up. August 7th.
Really nervous because it's my first time. But that is when our youth will be proposing their ideas of reform ideas for this next legislative.
Yeah, so the session is...
session.
They only do it in the spring, but you guys start in the spring and work throughout the spring, the summer, and the winter to decide how you approach them the next year. I guess that's mm-hmm. it takes that long, doesn't it, just to get one little idea into somebody's office. Are they receptive? I mean, when you go to Olympia, do they say, I'm talking to the big lobbyists who spend a lot of money, kid? Or do they say, yeah, come on in? I mean, or maybe you get everything. I don't know.
Well, you joined us last year for our big Youth Advocacy Day. So after Summit, we move in to finding champions for our bills and determining whether it's legislative or if it's administrative advocacy that we can do directly.
Mm.
But you joined us for Youth Advocacy Day, where we bring over 300 young people from around the state to come and talk with their lawmakers. Will you talk a little bit about your experience, Orion?
Yeah, it was exciting. It was snowmageddon that day.
Oh, oh, that late snow in the spring. Yeah.
We all woke up so early, especially Yakima. They were up before like 12 a.m. trying to get over here.
Yeah, that sounds... It was in February that it was so...
February 8th, yeah. It was really exciting. I got to be MC for this event, and we started off in one big... in the meeting room of church, and kind of went over what was going to happen for the day, and then we had our groups split up and go off into their meetings with the senators, and it was really exciting. Also nervous because first time, but it was really nice when I went to my assigned senator. We spoke with the representative, but because he was already booked in, but he was really excited when he came out for a second to just say hi and say, I love Mockingbird's work. I love being supportive of their agendas, and it was really encouraging to hear that.
And so that does sound encouraging, but I wonder, is that just, you know, politicians, they glad hand everybody and smile. Does anything get done? What achievements have you, can you tell us success stories about the Mockingbird Society and Olympia?
There was actually a very good example was another colleague of mine's group was assigned to
Representative Sen, Tana Sen.
And she had been on the fence about our Senate Bill 5290, mm-hmm. which would end the jailing of minors for non-criminal offenses.
Oh, yeah.
And she took onto, like, Facebook and, like, social media about after their meeting was that it was due to the youth in that group sharing their personal stories about, like, why that should not be a thing that made her, like, really passionate about it and, like,
and become a champion.
Become a champion. And
so that bill 5290 that made it through session this year.
It did. It was an incredible.
Sign that,
he already did.
Oh, good.
Yeah, it was quite the roller coaster ride. I mean, the dedication of our legislative champions is incredible. The bill got stuck a couple of times along the way, and Representative Noelle Frame and Representative Tana Sen. Really went the extra mile to see that this bill got passed.
So they had been...
Darnielle, too.
And Senator Darnielle, yeah.
So they had been putting kids, I mean, actually locking them up, what they thought for their own protection to take them out of some situation, but they hadn't committed a crime, but essentially they were being housed like they were criminals. Is that what you were fixing here?
That's, you know, that's exactly it. It's intent versus impact.
Yeah, that's right. You mentioned that before.
Yeah, and young people would be put into detention. You want to talk about sort of the things that they could be put in detention for?
For running away from a foster care placement, being truant from school.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it's also an example of one shoe size doesn't fit all, because there was some testimony about why the jailing minors should continue, which was there's an example that was said that... a youth had said if it hadn't been for detention that they never would have stopped acting out, but that's not true for everybody.
Yeah, that is not. Wow. Hey, we're going to have to wrap it up here. We've talked about the Mockingbird Society, and I think time has gone by so fast. Anything we need to say a second time, or some big point we left out that we can say here in a minute or so?
I guess I would just say that we have lots and lots of support out there from our partners and things, and it does take a village. We need everyone with us on this, because while we were able to lead these successful reforms, it took a lot of people to help us get over that hump. And Orion, do you want to talk a little bit about the event we have coming up this fall?
Yeah, I would really love to meet anybody who would like to join us for our 2019 luncheon. Is it on October 4th, 11:30 to 1:15? And they
sign up on our website.
Up on our website for advocacy alerts. Subscribe to print or digital version of the Mockingbird Times, which is our newspaper, and that's really cool because it's youth and young adults and also network grubs writing and submitting articles about their experiences in foster care and or homelessness.
You can also find it in Real Change. Our partners at Real Change include the Mockingbird Times in their publication.
That's a good place for it. You know, it's so nice to see that the youth are involved in this organization. It is not a bunch of adults saying, here's what's best for kids. It is youth with their own voice, and I think that is so great about the Mockingbird Society. Gosh, I can't thank you guys enough for being here today. We have been talking with Annie Blackledge. She's the executive director, and Orion Olson, network representative with the Mockingbird Society. Again, people go online, mockingbirdsociety.org. They're on Facebook. They're on Twitter. You'll find out more about them. And, gosh, a shout-out for more need for foster parents and families, right? I mean, we didn't even touch that. But
that's right.
Yeah, that's a big deal. Thank you guys so much for being here.
Thanks for having us.
I am so thankful for you guys to be in it. Bigger thanks for what the Mockingbird Society is doing for children in foster care here in Washington. If you'd like to hear this interview again, it will be available on Podcast One and iTunes within a few days. I am Gary Scheib. Thanks for listening today. We hope you've learned something new. Join us again next week as we continue to talk with people that are making a difference in our community.